is the Bob Addict Podcast for July 29th, 2015. Everything's okay,
cause I'm on vacation. We spent 14 hours on that sandcastle. Everything is great, cause I'm on vacation. Bob Addict. Bob Addict.
Automatic podcast where you can rock out with your library card out. I am Brian, and joining me today are
Bill,
Jeremy,
Mike,
Amanda.
As you can hear, we are recording today inside the puppet truck.
Yes. A little hot.
Who's got the strings now, man?
This is my new favorite game. Where are we recording this?
Not it.
What?
Wow. That got me.
What do you think I am, Miss Piggy?
You can't play with me.
Some of these puppets are really creepy. We will be recording in impromptu locations around downtown Nashville while the children's department is being remodeled. The theme of today's show is vacation. If you're lucky enough to have a job, you might be lucky enough to get a vacation. I hear people often do this in the summer. So today we'll tell you about the best books, movies, and music to veg out to on your vacation. Of course, we'll probably go meta and talk about things about vacations too, because we're meta.
So it feels like I just got back from vacation, even though it's probably been a couple weeks. I've done a fair bit of traveling over my lifetime, but this year my husband and I decided to visit my grandparents' lake cottage in northern Indiana. My great-grandfather actually purchased it in 1929 when my grandma was two, and it has been in our family this whole time. And we went over the 4th of July, and my brother's family was there as well. And let me tell you, that cottage is not that big. So we put 8 adults, 3 kids, and 1 dog in it on top of that, and it didn't get any bigger. But, you know, it's family, and so that's kind of the biggest part of the story. Now, in her latest fiction book, The Vacationers, Emma Straub tells the story of the Post family as they go on one last family vacation before their youngest daughter, Sylvia, heads off to college at Brown in the fall. Now, my family's not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but the Posts kind of make us look like the Waltons, minus the mountain. Mom is a high-strung food... The Post mom, not my mom. just to clarify. Is a high-strung food writer who has had a modicum amount of success, but no big book deal. Dad used to write for a men's magazine in New York, but was recently, finger quotes, encouraged to retire after he got a little too familiar with a certain female staffer whose father was on the board of directors. Their oldest son, Bobby, has a 40-year-old girlfriend and a large amount of unexpected debt, and their daughter Sylvia just wants to lose her virginity. Now, did you get all that? Okay, so now we're going to add in Mom's gay best friend, who is trying to adopt a baby with his husband, and they've got a full house. Fortunately, they're staying at a friend of a friend's place in Mallorca. Now, I've never been to Mallorca, but after reading this book, I kind of want to go because it seemed really cool. As a whole, I liked the book. It kind of reminded me of The Elegance of the Hedgehog by Muriel Barbary. I can't say him. Sorry, they're French. Muriel Barbary or The Beautiful Ruins by Jess Walter. There isn't really one character I liked better than another, but you kind of have to take it all together, and then it really just seems to work. It has really good balance. It's not too sappy. It's not too stupid. And the writing was really superb. The author really makes a good use of words. Initially, you know, I said I was on vacation, and I tried to read this one, but did I mention there were 11 people in a teeny tiny cottage? And in the end, I think it worked out better because I could actually sit down once I got back and enjoy the writing without being interrupted 87 times to find the green crayon that kept mysteriously falling down behind the couch. My problem with this book is I don't really know who to recommend it to. It's not really a chick lit type book because there's not really a big romance in it. Brian would probably like it because the writing's pretty good, but I'm not sure he cares enough about the Post family to, you know, really commit. It's not really a travelogue. It's not a food book. Nothing blows up, so that leaves out Bill and Jeremy. maybe I'll just give it to Mikey because I'm sure he'll like it.
Wow. That was well done.
Thank you.
Well,
We're done that.
I like that.
In the end, Vacationers is just a solid, well-written book, which I think we all need to read once in a while, just to remember how much fun it can be to use words well. And if you still have a summer vacation coming up, this would be a good one to take with you. Mikey?
Had life cereal once. Once.
Did you like
once?
It?
Once?
Yeah.
Nah. My mother gave me Frosted Flakes. Cereal once.
Once.
I was never allowed to have other cereal besides Frosted Flakes or Lucky Charms.
Well, what are you complaining about?
I know, that's fair.
Life cereal.
Those are delicious.
I think life cereal is amazing.
You know, 11 months of the year, I enjoy Frosted Flakes, and then Tony goes into retirement in October.
Okay, so you take 1 month off from Frankenberry.
You know, from Frankenberry.
How do you feel about Cinnamon Toast Crunch?
Pretty good. Although
I think it's overrated.
At the Pied Piper Creamery this weekend, I had the Cereal Killer, which is Cinnamon Toast Crunch in ice cream form.
Yeah.
Good stuff.
I did that at like one of those like Sweet CC's or something.
Yeah.
Oh,
like, I walked out, I looked like I'd been like a Cheech and Chong movie marathon just prior to going. There was so much stuff in there.
So you're going to talk about a cookbook today, Mike?
Not exactly.
Oh. Cookbooks require treats, by the way.
Time for a little seek. You may remember a little chain of bookstores that used to be called Borders. It was great. The selection was diverse.
Good coupons.
The vanilla frap they had tasted of cake better.
I used to work there.
Jeremy was there, so it's not 100% great.
My manager's last name was Sidebottom.
Well, that is great.
Officially, given Christian name.
His last name. His last.
Whoa.
His last name.
Whoa.
It was in New Mexico.
Good morning, Mr. Sidebottom.
His first name is Sidebottom. His last name is Butters.
Gilbert Sidebottom.
Mr. Sidebottom Butters.
I say, old bean. Welcome to Borders, I say. Quiet. I'm off
listening. Have some chocolates.
Was this the guy who was reading...
The tarot?
Mr. Doyle.
That was our manager. The tarot guy was just my direct supervisor, but our overall manager was Mr. Sidebottom.
Why am I indulging Jeremy, Mike? What book are you talking about?
I'm one sentence in to like four paragraphs. But alas, there are no more, I realized, when their bankruptcy announced that I, Mike, was partially to blame. For you see, I would sip a tasty frap and peruse their wonderful selection and buy nothing. For as anyone knows, you could buy books way cheaper online. I spit on $35 full-price books.
You read once and sit on your shelf forever.
Yeah, I'm currently pruning right now. It's taking forever. Occasionally, though, I would get suckered into their near-constant buy-two-get-one-free deals, which I will also put forward as one of the reasons for their demise. Well, you know, that and lack of e-books, I guess. Today's recommendation was from one of those many sales. The first travel book I ever bought/read, it is called The Sex Lives of Cannibals, Adrift in the Equatorial Pacific by J. Martin Troost. When the book begins, Troost is an incredibly lazy banker. Quote, personally, I regard idling as a virtue, but civilized society holds otherwise. That's right.
Stupid society.
You know, if only you get paid for just sitting around and not doing anything, I would be a millionaire. His girlfriend, Sylvia, has a job offer that would require her to move to the South Pacific. Jumping at the chance to laze about on a tropical beach instead of working at a crushing desk job, he encourages her to take the job offer. They move to the island of Tarawa.
Tarawa.
What she said. Which is part of the nation of Kiribati. Where they quickly, that's the cool island pronunciation, not the way it's spelled.
Not the way it's spelled at all.
Yeah, which threw me off. I had to look it up online because I remembered it was not pronounced.
See, I did the audiobook, so I didn't even know they were spelled different until I went to write the review about it.
Yeah.
Good times.
I think this comes up again later. Where they quickly realize it is not the paradise that they were hoping it to be. It is unbelievably hot all year long, since they are actually on the equator. And, you know, it's not stereotypical island paradise warm, but afternoon in hell kind of hot. The only people who wear pants are the Mormon missionaries, apparently. From what I recall from the book, but cannot confirm online, so the islanders don't use bathrooms, but instead go a little ways out to sea to do their business.
That's what the reef was for.
Staining the beaches, or reef, maybe on one side of the island. Ew. The only thing that anyone eats is fish, prepared a number of different ways, including rotten.
And an excrement. Apparently.
They go to one side. There's the fishing beach, and there's the pooping beach, apparently, if I recall correctly.
So no poo-poo platter,
but... Extra poo-poo.
Throwback.
Callback.
Double pun. Throwback.
No one gets that.
Well, I appreciate your callback, even though I didn't laugh much. Their poet laureate is a 21-year-old British guy who's never written poetry before and cannot pronounce Kiribati. Because calling it Kiribati, because that's the way it's spelled. And when he tries to order stuff from the United States, he finds that since there are no street names and his phone number needs more digits... He can't get anything shipped. But of course, a misery equals comedy, and this book is really funny. Here's some more quotes that I found on Goodreads. Like many highly educated people, I didn't have much in the way of actual skills. I liked. And another one, it is often said that Americans have no sense of history. Ask a college student who Jimmy Carter was, and they will likely reply that he was a general in the Civil War, which occurred in 1492.
But he's coming tomorrow.
Last week, when he signed my boob.
wasn't it right before that assassination attempt?
Oh.
That's right. Yeah, I left on that guy. You know, I tried to shove a peanut burr. When Americans dumped tea into the Gulf of Tonkin, sparking the First World War, which ended in the invasion of Grenada and the development of the cotton press.
I admire your ability to...
I kept going.
Stick with that joke.
You did stick with it. Dedication.
Stick with the landing, even if it was not funny. that's the way proper comedy is. We have
that's the way chupacabra comedy is.
Exactly. I'm sorry. The chupacabra sucks goats. I suck humor out of chips.
Everyone needs a hobby.
We have the sex lives of cannibals on Hoopla. We also have the sequel in multiple forms, Getting Stoned with Savages, which is pretty good, which details their adventures in Fiji and Vanuatu. And there's a third book that he wrote called Lost on Planet China, which I assume is on some sort of planet.
I've read this book, too, and I really liked it. And the things I thought that were cool about it were... well, first of all, it's not really an island. It's called an atoll,
like
which is basically like a reef. Yeah. That part of the reef is high enough for people to live on.
That's right, future correction.
I did a little research afterwards. Tarawa is one of the first countries we will lose with global warming.
Oh.
Because it's so low. Like, they're already making plans to, like, purchase other islands because they're flooded. Because they're so low-lying that... Which I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Take that, climate deniers.
Yeah, and they, like, the Martin Troost and his wife, when they came back, had such culture shock that they were afraid of going to the mall.
Well, I'm afraid of going to the mall.
I love the mall.
That's because they took one, like, a mile wide or something.
Yeah, and then went back to Washington, D.C., which is a fairly highly populated, you know, East Coast.
After 2 years of being on something a mile wide.
And not even having a car. Yeah, so I mean, and it's part of the reason I liked it so much is because he's so funny.
Yeah,
because he's so self-deprecating about everything. And so, yeah, it's if you need a good book, it's worth reading. And it's scary because they do poop everywhere. But.
Oh, it's... so I remember that, and, you know, I kept trying to find a review that would confirm it. It's like, I think everybody tried to forget that.
I don't think they have a separate. I think that they're just like, that's their sewer system, is they're just like, hey!
The ocean's right there.
It's
how bad could it be? You know?
Yeah, pretty fresh.
Wow. Amanda, you said you reviewed this book?
I'm on the off-the-shelf block, yes.
Who you got, Bill?
Well, I've got a vacation for you.
Oh!
Woo.
Well, I have two vacation spots for you. Both places come from the mind of the late, great Michael Crichton. The first is the movie Westworld, written and directed by Michael Crichton. Imagine a high-tech amusement park called Delos, in which you could visit Westworld, Medieval World, or Roman World, in which you could carry out your own personal fantasies. To help carry out your fantasies are androids, or robots. One such robot is a gunslinger portrayed by Yul Brynner. But the excitement starts when the robots catch a virus, and everything goes wrong.
Your attention, please. We will soon be landing at Westworld, the ultimate resort.
We have you on grid 5, over.
It consists of 3 worlds of the past.
Locking in now.
Worlds where you can live out your every fantasy. There's Roman World, the lusty, decadent delights of Imperial Pompeii.
Notify ground crews.
Medieval World, chivalry and combat in 13th century Europe. And Westworld, lawless violence on the American frontier of 1880. Each resort is maintained by reliable computer technology and peopled by lifelike robot men and women.
Let's stand by for resort activation. Ready on 6, on 5, on 4, on 3, on 2. Activate now.
Our robots are programmed to provide you with an unforgettable vacation.
Dinner at 7, breakfast at 6:30. Get lunch on your own. Don't look like much here, but we have everything.
You mean to tell me he's a robot?
What'll it be?
Vodka martini on the rocks with a twist of lemon. Very dry, please.
Just give him whiskey. He's new in town.
Many elements of the Delos Resort are potentially dangerous. That's part of the appeal.
Go on.
You say something, boy.
Kill them.
Your move.
Our technology is designed to provide all this in complete safety. In Westworld, frustrations find release. Desire ends in satisfaction.
Let me handle it.
And all in a controlled environment.
That's not supposed to happen.
We know you'll enjoy your stay in Westworld.
Hold it.
The ultimate resort.
Let me do it this time.
Where nothing, nothing can possibly go wrong.
You shot.
Go wrong.
Raw.
Go wrong.
Oh my God.
Shut down. Shut down immediately.
From MGM, starring Yul Brynner, Richard Benjamin, and James Brolin. Westworld, the ultimate resort. Boy, do we have a vacation for you. For you. For you. For you.
Now, it's interesting, this movie came out in 1973, and Crichton was the first to say computers can catch viruses. Westworld has had a tremendous influence. Do you realize that the Terminator and Michael Myers of the Halloween movies were directly influenced by the robot gunslinger in Westworld? And after Westworld was released, attendance in Disneyland went down. Also,
the Hall of Presidents, Lincoln's giving me weird looks.
Also, HBO has filmed a television show. I don't know, starring Anthony Hopkins and Ed Harris, which is based on the movie. It's supposed to be coming out later this year. Also, Michael Crichton influenced himself to do another variation on the futuristic theme park. He wrote a book called Jurassic Park. Instead of robots, genetically recreated dinosaurs that run amok on the theme park of the future. I'm also recommending the book and not the movie. The book is a good old page-turner. It was one of those books you had to see how it ended. I prefer the book to the movie because the book is just, well, to put it bluntly, more violent. And it gets into the psychology of the warfare with the raptors. The movie is a little too much Spielberg. Well, yeah. Steven Spielberg directed it, and that was another problem. I always kind of felt Spielberg was trying to please two sides, and he never really pleased either one. I have to say, though, that if I made the movie, the way I wanted it to be would be NC-17. it's amazing the influence Westworld's had had. And you ask, what's the big summer hit this year? Jurassic World. I've shown Westworld at the movies at Maine in January. It was a huge success. We have it in our collection, and if you want to learn more, I have an interview posted on the Legends of Film podcast with producer of Westworld, Paul Lazarus.
It kind of sounds like Westworld probably influenced Dollhouse a little bit, too, that Joss Whedon show where they were, like, creating dolls.
That's a possibility. It's
amazing. I never heard of it, but...
Yeah.
I watched Westworld earlier this year, and I was struck by how much shorter Yul Brynner is than everybody else. I mean, he's still creepy. He's got those, like, glowing eyes and stuff, but, like, it was really,
that's
like, you know,
eyes.
This dude who's, like, you know, a foot shorter than everybody.
Jurassic Park was definitely more, like, E.T. and could have used a little more Jaws.
I remember as a kid, I liked the book a lot better.
Yeah, me
you
too.
Know, people like, were, like, you know, it was, like, a huge thing for, like, people around our age. It,
yeah,
like, you know,
so.
I'm, like... But the book is so much better.
That was one of the first times that I had, like, read a book before I saw the movie, because I heard about it somehow, and I was like, dinosaurs? I
yeah.
I love dinosaurs.
That was around the age where, you know, dinosaurs are awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I'm
still waiting for that age, by the way. Never thought that would be a problem.
You retire, and you're like, hey, no, I think I'm getting dinosaurs.
I'm thinking 84, 85, yeah.
I do love the thing that you can find on YouTube. It's Jeff Goldblum from... Jurassic Park laughing for 10 hours on the helicopter when they're on the helicopter, and he's like, huh, huh. It's a loop. It's 10 hours.
YouTube is so weird with those, like, you know, let's have a 10-hour of, like, this 3-minute song. It's yeah. Like, I don't like any song.
There's a 24-hour loop of the background noise of the Enterprise from Star Trek Next Generation.
You go to sleep to every night.
I love that. I want that so bad. But you're going to talk about music today, right,
Jeremy? I am going to talk about music. I could listen to...
Jeremy. What's Jeremy?
Put the stick with me.
We got off on dinosaurs, man.
Hey, man. Yeah. I get off on dinosaurs. Fictional. Oh, Amazon to prove it.
That's some Amazon reading material that I did not know.
I can't tell you about one later.
Great. You guys share a love of dinosaur erotica.
No.
Who doesn't? Yeah.
The music I would prefer to listen to would be 10 Hours of Jeff Goldblum Laughing.
That's Triceratops with my book.
But around 1994 or 1995, I decided to steal some records from my dad. I was uninterested in his Pat Benatar records, and I dared not touch his Kiss collection, which still contained all the posters, temporary tattoos, and a malfunctioning but otherwise intact Love Gun from the album Love Gun. He'd long since switched to buying CDs, but the turntable was still set up in a big glass cabinet in our living room, and I used to play it whenever my folks were out. The records were relegated to some wooden crates upstairs, right next to a cardboard box with his magazine collection, which I completely ignored. My dad's taste, then and now, fit easily into the classic rock category. He came of age in the 1970s, so there was plenty of Seeger, Helping a Skinner, and Rich... buttery dollops of Rush. It was all pretty standard stuff, even though, like, Pat Benatar is still sort of a weird aberration to me. But even weirder in his record collection was the inclusion of the Go-Go's. He had their first three records, Beauty and the Beat, Vacation, and Talk Show. Now, you can find the band's complete catalog on Hoopla, but today I want to talk about the excellent two-disc compilation Return to the Valley of the Go-Go's, a best-of rarities collection that's available at the library on CD and is also on Hoopla. This set features music from the earliest days of the band right up through their 1994 reunion. This set was released in 1994. You get We Got the Beat, Our Lips Are Sealed, and of course Vacation. That song is relevant to today's discussion because, duh. 2 weeks at you and I still have power over you, yeah. Vacation, all I ever wanted. Vacation has to get away. Vacation meant to be stuck alone. Vacation, all I ever wanted. Vacation has to get away. Vacation meant to be stuck alone.
Wow. I really got to get away. Yeah. That song.
Yeah, wow. That song also has the distinction of being the first song issued on Ka-Single, a term trademarked by the band's label, IRS Records.
I had the Vanilla Ice Go Ninja Go thing. Wow. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 on Ka-Single.
Wow.
Good stuff.
My wife has the More Than Words Ka-Single, and I used to have the Cranberries Linger Ka-Single because they were still making those.
Oh, so they still made that?
Yeah, yeah, they were made 90s, you know.
Hey. I thought the world of you.
Zombie.
I lost me at zombie, man. Lost me at zombie. In addition to the pure pop goodness of the Go-Go's we know and love, you also get some early live recordings of the band's punk origins. And in case you doubt their punk credibility, lead singer Belinda Carlisle got her start as drummer Dottie Danger in a little group called the Germs. And the Go-Go's original name was the Misfits. So there. This collection also features
Like Jim and the Holograms?
No.
was Glenn Danzig the original lead singer?
That would be... can you hear that?
So many Misfits.
They talk about us. Tell lies. Can you see that?
You've totally derailed.
I wish I had more
Misfits. Can't seem to get my mind off of you.
Oh. Danzig duo.
I think that's later Danzig. Misfits is more like, I can't sing any of the lyrics.
We are the streets at night. probably what happened was they're like, hey, ladies, let's call our band the Misfits. And they're like, wait, there's already a band from Lodi, New Jersey called that, and they have deadlock haircuts. Okay, how about the Go-Go's? Sold.
This sounds like true a story. Conversation that would totally happen.
That is the biopic. I just wrote it.
All right.
Behind the music.
Yeah. This collection also features a cover of another of my favorite bands, the Shangri-Las. A song called Remember Walking in the Sand. And it also features my absolute favorite Go-Go song, How Much More. This is a different version than the album track for Beauty and the Beat. Still great. It was written by the band's guitarist Charlotte Caffey and Janet Wheatland. And for a music class in high school, we were supposed to bring in music that we liked and talk about the different elements in it, how they worked together, what we liked about it. The point was to go beyond the "it's got a good beat" description and to use vocabulary words that we had learned, like timbre, which looks like timbre on paper.
That always throws me off.
Yeah, it sucks. Screw you, music class.
That's when, right.
When I...
Sorry, Amanda.
That was I would have said something class. Like that, but she's sitting right here.
Yeah. I can reach you.
Yeah. I'm a terrible musician, but I play guitar. When I played...
That's about right.
Yeah. You and everybody else. Yeah.
Welcome to Nashville.
How do you get a drummer off your porch? Pay for the pizza. When I... When I played the song that I love, How Much More, the music teacher told me a story of how he heard how drummer Go-Go's drummer Gina Schock used a click track when she was playing live because supposedly she wasn't very talented. He implied that she wasn't a good drummer because she was a lady. And then he played Kansas's Carry On Wayward Son as an example of good music. So I'd like to take this opportunity to play my Don't Want to Bring You Down card.
Don't bring me down.
20 years after the fact, and say that Kansas drools and the Go-Go's rule.
Can I play my Don't Want to Bring You Down card?
Don't bring me down!
Again?
Because Kansas is better than the Go-Go's.
You are crazy!
My mom dated the guy who was in Kansas.
See?
Wow. Your mom my dated son, a guy from Kansas.
The band, not the state.
I once rode on an elevator with Jane Wheelton once.
Oh, yeah? Was she tied up with ropes?
No, she was in a wheelchair with a broken leg.
Oh, no.
Also on this elevator was Patton Oswalt. Jeez.
What the?
That's
what?
That's a
weirdest elevator.
Yeah, I know. They're always elevator stories.
You're going to write a book. People have been on the elevator with.
Yeah, this was at Comic-Con.
That's
once
amazing.
Again, first Patton Oswalt gets on, and then her, I guess, boyfriend, husband, is wheeling her on the elevator, and she sees Patton. She goes, "Hi, Patton!" That little squeaky voice. And then, "Oh, hey, Jane!" And they carry on a little comment. What are you doing here? I'm hosting panels at Comic-Con.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
This is amazing. And
then wow. Stan Lee walks on.
I know Stan Lee. Yeah, Excelsior.
But that's a true story.
That's
across
very cool.
My heart.
That's much better than everyone dogpiling on my musical taste again.
Hey, that one song I know from the Go-Go's is good.
Yeah.
I don't know about the other 100.
I think for me, the Go-Go's is like a low-hanging fruit, so I'm just not going to go there. But no, I got nothing against the Go-Go's at all. And I was even going to say, you know, one of my favorite music, nonfiction music books that I've read in the last couple of years is The Oral History of Darby Crash. And I'll have to do a correction about what the title is.
Is it We Got the Neutron Bomb, the LA Punk?
No, but I...
Or was it specifically about Darby Crash?
It's specifically the oral history about Darby Crash and the Germs.
Okay.
And it was the basis for the Darby Crash biopic that came out a few years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And there's a lot of good stuff in there about the Go-Go's because the band's shared members.
Yeah, which is a ridiculous connection.
Our library is awesome, and we do have the book I'm speaking of. Lexicon Devil, The Fast Times and Short Life of Darby Crash and the Germs. By Brendan Mullen. Now there's no segue. I ruined the show. And I'm supposed to talk next. Jeremy, the Go-Go's are so much fun. You bring so much joy to the podcast. I, of course, am going to bring us down with an anchor. Like, okay.
It's, to the bottom. It's Brian, the living, I'm bringing you down to earth.
I'm just going to drag us down to the bottom of the ocean with kittens tied to it.
It's just,
wow. With kittens?
No kittens were hurt during the...
Have you heard that story about how a bunch of babies went on vacation and they all died?
I'm a librarian. I'm a cat lover.
It's written in book form. You can check it out, I guess.
I'm a librarian, cat lover. No kittens were hurt. I'm a contrarian or something.
Or something.
And, you know, people are like, I'm going to go on vacation. I'm going to relax. I'm going to read a light book. I'm going to read a beach book. You know, if I got some time off, I'm hitting a tome. I want to dig in. I've got the book that's on my shelf that's like 1,000 pages and dusty. You know, I want to have a thesaurus and a dictionary. And I want to, you know, start at point A and end at point A prime after I went through the alphabet one whole time.
It's like playing Super Mario Brothers all the way through.
Yeah.
And then starting over.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, well, you know,
Princess is another cast.
And the person that writes books like that is William Volman. And I've talked about him before on the podcast, but I'm super excited because earlier in this week, his new book, The Dying Grass, has been released. Now, if you're a longtime podcast listener, you know I've talked about this book before. Yeah, on my most excited about books, most excited about things episode. So this book is coming out. It is the history of the Nez Perce War by William Volman, where it's historical fiction. He goes back and forth between all these different indigenous folks and all these different U.S. military folks. I'm so excited. You know, the best book that he ever wrote was...
Europe Central.
Good job. And...
Never read it. I just knew he was
going
to say it.
I'm excited that you know, he really did a good job with the war scenario, so I'm excited that he's writing another book about a war. And then, of course, this is part of his series, the Seven Dreams series, so far of which he has written six.
Ooh.
And that's about the European colonization of America. Just real quick, The Ice Shirt was about Vikings coming to North America in the 9th and 10th centuries. Fathers and Crows was about Jesuit missionaries in Canada in the 16th century. Argyle was his retelling of the Jamestown story, but it was written in 17th century prose.
Ooh.
Number 5 is The Dying Grass, which just came out this week. Number 6 was The Rifles, which was about Sir John Franklin's attempt at the Northwest Passage. Now, I often talk about Volman. He's written some books I don't like. The Rifles, I never finished it. It was just like, ugh. The Ice Shirt, I finished. It was really interesting. It wasn't the best book in the world. Some of his other stuff totally blows my mind. You know, I've talked about how I'm kind of... Really, you know, I just have depression or something. I have no interest in any narrative art forms whatsoever anymore. Like, I don't care about TV shows or movies. I don't care about the characters. I don't care about novels. Everyone's just dead to me. It's like, oh, look, I grew a second head. I'm like, you know, go see a doctor. You know, I don't care.
Wow.
But while I was waiting for The Dying Grass to come out, you know, Volman did put out this book called Last Stories and Other Stories, and it was like ghost stories that he put out. And, you know, just reading the first page, his prose were so vibrant, and he was just so uncompromising and in your face. I was just like, oh, I can't wait for this guy to read another book. You know, it got me excited about fiction again. That doesn't happen very much. So The Dying Grass, if you're the kind of person that wants to go deep on vacation, hit a big, thick book, The Dying Grass by William Volman. Hey guys, what's tickling your fancy this week? I don't know.
Hey guys, what do we do on tickle my fancy? Yeah.
Well,
maybe the library has it.
Maybe the library doesn't. But either way, it's tickling our fancy.
Jeremy.
Tickling my fancy this week. I'm carrying on the torch for last week when everyone dumped on my music taste again.
Hey, you got the cover of the post on the blog.
Oh, I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Congrats.
Big ups to me.
Yeah.
So this week, tickling my fancy, is Elvis Costello's MTV Unplugged performance from 1991. This is the bearded years for Elvis, a weird phase in his career when he'd just come off his biggest hit single and put out an angry Baroque album. I'm acting like Mike and began performing with a ragtag band, which included bonkers guitarist Mark Rebo, Attraction Pete Thomas, TCB band bassist Jerry Sheff, and Wrecking Crew keyboardist Larry Nechtel. So only a short portion of this show was actually broadcast, but there's an upload of the full show on YouTube, including some false starts and sort of awkward walking around the stage stuff, and a dig at MTV for showing Army recruitment commercials, and this was during the first Gulf War. So he's digging at that. Highlights include the band banging on some trash cans during Hurry Down Doomsday. The Bugs are taking over. And a pretty raw recording performance of Couldn't Call It Unexpected Number 4. Or is it Expected? I can't remember. Anyway, Costello's voice is really ragged. And he even says, like, I have a sore throat. And he seems like he's in a
what
really...
What is that? His voice is more ragged than it already is?
It's not ragged.
I would say his voice for me is very scruffy.
Oh, yeah?
I think his voice is scruffy.
Okay.
Well, if I had to describe his voice, I would say it's like a bourbon. I was going to defend his voice in the last episode.
Okay. Well, good. That's cool.
I will stay... Silent, out of respect.
Fair enough. It also seems like he's really in a terrible mood, and so it's kind of a fast, like maybe he's like has a cold or something. But this is a transitional period in his career when he was sort of sloughed off the trappings of rock and roll and was also like not with his band anymore, and he kind of started doing whatever the hell he wanted, and so it led to some interesting and not good and some good stuff. So check it out on the YouTubes. Bill?
Tickling My Fancy is a DVD. We have on order. It's called Jinx, The Life and Deaths of Robert Durst. This was a show, like a six-part documentary that aired on HBO earlier this year. It's the fascinating story of Robert Durst, who comes from one of the wealthiest families in New York. He is suspected in the disappearance of his first wife, the murder of one of his friends, and he did murder his next-door neighbor and then dismember him with a hacksaw and got away with it. I don't want to tell you too much, but if you like true crime stories, this one is one of the best. It's The Jinx, The Life and Deaths of Robert Durst, and one of the plus things, you don't have Dateline's Keith Morrison going, or is it, every 15 minutes? Straight through. So, Mike, what's tickling your fancy?
I have that on hold. I'm looking forward to it. Oh boy, oh boy. I'm glad that you're not recommending what I found out this week, because I thought this would be up your alley. There's a new streaming service called Shudder.com, which streams only horror movies. Now I am full tantric horror mode, saving all my deathly delights until Shocktober.
Okay.
That's right. So I haven't seen it yet, because, you know, I'm getting primed and ready, and oh, so exciting.
Well, you're like the Gordon Sumner of horror.
I have no idea what that means. But I did peruse their selection this morning. And, all right. I will kill you.
It stinks.
Later.
I got that Dune reference.
That's right.
Like anybody else did.
I stopped listening 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, you should. But they do have some good stuff you won't find on Netflix, like Evil Dead, The Reanimator, the stuff about a homicidal dessert topping, which is awesome. And the good Hellraiser movies, all two of them. I do find the inclusion...
You mean 3 and 4, right?
Hey, 6 and 7, you know, get it right. The one with Lance Henriksen where he has a MMO that kills you by sending Pinhead after you. Is so amazing, quote-unquote.
I love the Hellraiser movies so much that I feel obligated to say 1 and 2 are the good Hellraiser movies.
Yes. Kind of liked 4 when I saw it at the time, but I have a feeling I probably would not like it much now. And then there's like 2 that are remakes of each other. Anyway, they also I find it a little weird that they include Ricky O, which is technically a kung fu movie, but you know, a guy does have his head explode by being crushed between 2 hands, so I guess
which
that counts.
We may remember from The Daily Show.
Yes,
right?
It used to be a Daily Show with Craig Kilborn. They also curate, you can also curate it by theme, like A-horror or Asian horror, you know, or Socko Spoose, which I think is their word for comedy horror.
That's all stuff from Mankind, WWF.
I prefer Dude Love myself. Yeah. I've read somewhere that the person in charge of choosing content for the site is also the person in charge of choosing films that go into the Toronto International Film Festival, or TIFF, which is weird. But Shudder.com is only $5 a month. Check it out if you dare. Ooh, what do you have, Amanda?
Not that.
I doubted it.
No, I will save my $5. But I am actually going to talk about a documentary, not a book. So whoa, be excited.
It's a documentary about books?
It's not a documentary. Although I'm looking for one. That would be awesome. Okay. So I'm going to talk about a new documentary that we just got into our collection that actually depicts the creation of a new ballet for the New York City Ballet. 25-year-old Justin Peck was actually commissioned to create this ballet by the company, and he's also a member of their corps de ballet, so he's very familiar with their program. His ballet is called Paz de la Jolla, which I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. That's as close as I can get. And it was actually the only new ballet of the 2013 season that they did. They did a bunch of classic stuff. This film is not a typical documentary. Justin and his cohorts never speak directly to the camera. They don't answer questions. They don't really explain what they're doing. They just kind of exist, and the camera's there to capture it. We start with Justin in a dance studio by himself, beginning to develop the choreography. He's filming himself on his iPhone. You can like see they film him filming on the iPhone while he's dancing. And then it expands to picking up he has three principal dancers. Then he brings in the core. This is kind of over a course of several months. Then you see him talking with the conductor of the orchestra, and talking about music and what music he's going to use. And just fun fact, New York City Ballet is the only ballet company in the U.S. that keeps a full-time orchestra staffed for their productions. Most folks pull them in as needed for shows. I think my favorite part of the film was actually when they went to design the costumes for this. I did not realize all of their costume work is done in-house. And we see the creative team kind of discussing with the dancers, you know, what's comfortable, what can you dance in, is this going to work? And then they discuss kind of fabric choices, color samples, kind of the idea of what they're doing, which they actually, for this, was a piece written in 1935. And so, like, the costumes were kind of like 1935 beachwear. So they were not like typical tutus and, you know, all of that. I was unaware, too, that they go as far to dye their own fabrics in-house. There's a scene where this lady's all dressed up with, like, the chemical hazard suit, like, pouring blue dye into the washing machine, jeez, and checking it and pouring, like, yeah, I mean, like, this is serious business.
They have actual funding.
Yeah, it's magic how this works.
It's New York City.
So NPR says this movie is kind of long on art and short on drama, which means there are no stupid catfights backstage. And I think that's also why I liked it. You know, if you want that reality smut, feel free to watch TV at any hour of the day.
Or Black Swan.
They mentioned that.
Yeah, right? Is there any, like, people turning into, like, growing wings and stuff?
Yeah.
I'd watch it then.
They mentioned that.
I mean,
And Brian always brings up Rotten Tomatoes, so Rotten Tomatoes gave this movie they have an 84% approval rating, which doesn't suck. For me, this movie was really more about the creative process than all the drama with all of that. And they didn't tell us about it, they showed us, and I thought it was definitely worth watching. So that was Ballet 422.
I have no corrections. Does anyone have any corrections today?
Hold on there a minute, Mr. Host. You have a huge correction. Rick Wakeman never played in Emerson, Lake, and Palmer. That's why the band is not called Emerson, Lake, and Palmer Wakeman. Durr. Rick Wakeman and Keith Emerson did collaborate on some projects in the 2000s. That's as close as my imaginary prog rock dream that I made up in last week's episode ever came to realization.
I have a minor correction. While listening to the last episode, combing for possible corrections, I thought I was doing pretty well to the very, very end. What I meant to say during the Pickle My Nancy segment was that for the past couple weeks, the first thing that popped into my mind for a perfect recommendation I had already talked about in a previous Fickle My Tansy segment. So therefore, it cannot be recommended again. If you're curious, the sentence that was pretty clear when I wrote it down but came out as incomprehensible gibberish.
Are you the one you just read?
Hey, in the previous episode, future correction, was something along the lines of, for the Australian episode, I could have talked about the rover, but no. And as opposed to...
And scene.
And you have talked about the rower.
Yes, I'd already talked about
that's
it.
That's what they were saying.
So I cannot talk about it again.
You've also talked about your crush on Tom Hardy in the past.
He is...
Star Trek nemesis.
He is new hotness, you know. Need to check me out some, whatchamacallit. Is that the one where he's like got a mustache and he kills people in prison?
What? Star Trek Nemesis? No.
I would have guessed no.
See, I would have watched Star Trek Nemesis then.
Yeah, it would have been good if that's what it was about.
Yeah.
Star Trek Nemesis isn't that bad.
I've heard it's horrible.
It's not that good, man.
No, it's not that bad.
I mean, I didn't hate it.
It's the only Star Trek movie I've not seen.
It was like a bad episode of Voyager with like an Data action.
You mean an average episode of Voyager? Oh!
Future corrections.
So I heard that you got corrections, Jeremy.
I also have some corrections. Very minor. Bill used the wrong article in reading the title of Go Set a Watchman. You said Go Set the Watchman.
Oh, well, that's mess you up the catalog.
That's the mashup with Alan Moore, you know.
Go Set the Watchman.
I've never heard somebody make that joke before.
I saw a thing online yesterday. It was like, who said it? Go Set a Watchman or the Watchman? And it was like, but I didn't click.
Well, yeah, at least I didn't say How to Kill a Mockingbird. Which people have asked me that.
Brian, you mentioned Encounters of the Third Kind, but of course, when you're talking about Yes and like music and aliens, but of course, it's Close Encounters of the Third Kind. No big deal. Mike, you said
well, you're in trouble.
You said I pick on everyone except Bill and Amanda. So that's just Brian and me.
That's not a correction.
That
sounds
about right.
And in a similar vein, I don't think that Brian needs to give Wes Anderson another try because he made his best movies already, and everything now is just exaggerated versions of his earlier work without any of the heart. Mic drop.
Oh.
Is that your snob card?
Yeah, wow.
I guess so.
Pardon me, would you have any gray poupon?
Retro snob card.
I just realized, I listened to the show and I thought about it. I was like, I didn't really, any of his movies. I did like Fantastic Mr. Fox, and I liked a lot of Moonrise Kingdom, but I didn't like Grand Budapest Hotel, and Darjeeling Limited had like the most obvious, like,
I didn't even try
like,
to watch that
visual
one.
Metaphor. I'm clumsy. We're all fighting about our dad dying, and then we have his luggage, and oh, we left his luggage behind. His baggage. I'm like, so stupid.
Cool, man. Hey, this is all stuff for the Pop-matic podcast after show. We start posting on Friday afternoons.
We should do it after
our show. Our spinoff episodes.
So just our new catalog, which will be, which you can test right now. Ooh. If you type in Go Set the Watchman, you get the correct book. If you type
you do?
In, yes.
Good
if,
catalog.
If you type in Encounters of the Third Kind without the word close, you get the right book. That's why it's tickling my fancy.
That, yeah.
This catalog is smarter than we are.
That's amazing. So you mean it works like the internet does?
Burn.
Someone told me yesterday that librarians are not Google. It's like sort of. They're like human.
Yes,
human.
Huh?
That was
like,
what I spent two years in library school learning.
How to be Google?
Like, pretty much, yes. Yeah. You know, oh, have you heard this search technique? I don't care. Let's play with books.
I reminded them that I'm a bridge over the digital divide.
Over troubled water?
Yeah, I'm also not a librarian, I guess. But
there's a comedy troupe out there that does if Google were a man. My husband was playing it for me, but like it's a dude sitting behind a desk with like these people all come in and asking questions and
you need to
Google if Google were a man.
That could be fun.
Wow, so exciting!
In the know!
For more information and where you can click the Ask the Librarian link to ask your reference question, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
Next week,
school.
Back to school days.
School's out
for summer. Just kidding. School's in. Summer. School's in.
I don't care about history.